Blog Talk Radio.
The artist is an indie artist straight out of Stone Mountain, Georgia. He goes by Ian Clayton, and the title to that track is Embrace It. I felt appropriate to play something such as that because currently we are embracing change as we speak. Today's topic, reopening the states. It's more than just Georgia and Florida and Texas that are reopening. Let's dig a little deeper. There are the states of, and they go as follows. More than 97% of the U.S. population is currently under a stay-at-home or shelter-in-place order as the coronavirus pandemic continues to upend life as we know it. More than 50,000 Americans have died, but worries for the economy and people's mental health are raising the question, when will things go back to normal? So currently, Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, District of Columbia, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, and we have a few, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, just to name a few, are actually taking this step in place to start reopening slowly. Today's guest, I have attorney Daryl Hines out of Atlanta, Georgia, and Aaron Woodhouse out of Atlanta, Georgia. I want to hear from these gentlemen regarding the state of our culture currently in Atlanta, Georgia, as well as their opinions and views of what's happening currently. The views and opinions on this show are strictly ours. And if you don't like it, you don't have to listen. But we're going to go forward with that, and I'm going to introduce the gentlemen that are here in the studio with me. Welcome, Aaron Woodhouse.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, House?
Hanging in there.
So, Daryl Hines, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking.
Oh, that's very good. Okay, guys, so we know that currently, Governor Kemp had started one of the nation's biggest push to reopen the state of Georgia. You know, last Friday, it was the start of barbershops, gyms, salons, massage therapy, all could reopen. And then it started going forward that as of Monday, there will be a few things more opening. I want to hear from you all. on this subject matter and how it's affecting your lives personally, if you don't mind divulging into that. I'll start with you, Aaron Woodhouse, and you can give me your insight on this.
So, you know, I think the stay-at order that he had put in place the first time was okay. I think it was kind of ridiculous for people who to go back out the way they did. I think they could have done it another way. And the way you're doing it now is having a negative. I think it's going to have a negative effect on our community as a whole, because they say we are one of them.
Okay.
When I say we as colored folks are known as one of the. We are one of the minorities are the ones that are affected by this virus the most.
Now, when you say we, are you saying we as African Americans or we as the people?
We as minorities.
Okay. Okay. All right. And what way do you feel we as minorities? And this is a quick question, and you can answer this. Do you think that all these states open and minorities are succumbing to the COVID in large numbers, you reduce the number of minority voters in those jurisdictions because they have died from the complications of the COVID, and life goes on as usual, and this does raise questions on the rationale of educated people in charge. So do you think that this is a ploy to knock us out, minorities out, so the minority vote is not as high come election? Like, what do you think about that?
I think it's all a possibility, you know, and I think it's a good possibility, because if you look at what they say the coronavirus affects, it says the majority of the people that it affects are minority. And President Trump is really about getting rid of minorities. He's about himself. He's not about us as a people.
Right.
Because of the things that he does, the decisions that he makes, you can never know whether he's telling the truth or not.
Right. Now, Daryl, do you want to chime in on this?
Well, yeah, and I have a slightly different view or perspective. I think, first of all, yeah, I agree with House that the way they implemented and are implementing opening the state, as well as some of the things that are happening in other states, it's too fast. First thing they should have ensured was that they would have wholesale testing, so people, you know, you find out, you know, where the risks are. I mean, obviously, if people aren't tested, and you got to you open the state, and people are now coming back out without you know, sufficient protections, as though, you know, nothing's happened. I think that risk, you know, presents a risk to all of us. And I also believe, I don't know so much about the intent.
Daryl, do me a favor and try to, like, move to a different area in your home or wherever you are, because you're coming in a little fuzzy, if you don't mind. That may help the reception. So that way we can hear your thoughts.
Is this better?
That's much better. Yeah.
Okay. What I was saying is, I think in some ways it's an unintended consequence in terms of the effect on minorities. I think one of the things is that when you look at the places that are most affected, like you mentioned, I think in your intro, about beauty salons, barbershops, you know, massage, estheticians, you know, places like that, mostly are employed, they mostly employ minorities, okay? And the question, and I read an article not long ago that kind of spoke to some of the motives behind that the governor here in Georgia's intent. And that was to get people off the unemployment rolls. You know, Georgia has because of the impact.
Okay. That last
COVID.
Part I didn't catch because he's still a little fuzzy. I'm not sure if you put me back on speaker.
No.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. So say that last part again so that way we get your opinion in really good. So what did you say the last part was?
Okay, I was saying that one of the motives is to get people off of unemployment. And the thought is that those people in those industries that have been named, that have been reopened, are mainly lower paid. However, the numbers are eating away at Georgia's unemployment compensation fund. And from what I've read, that fund would be exhausted in 6 months. I think it's like $2.5 billion that are in reserve. And that would be exhausted. So the impetus is to, you know, get people – it's a financial impact for the state.
Okay. I'm going to take I'm going
to
go forward, Daryl. We got to work on your reception. But I'm not quite sure if you have to call in from a different phone or a different or just try to go to a different part of the wherever you are so I can hear you clear. But to add on to what both of you guys are saying and chime in with me, because I do like your opinion about the strategy and yours, House, about the strategy of this affecting minorities. Just today, Atlanta mayor issues coronavirus warning for people going to nail salons. She just issued this as of 6:10 p.m. on the 25th. Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottom put out a warning today for anyone getting a manicure at the state's newly reopened salons. If you're getting your nails done right now, please share these new numbers with your manicurist. And so the new numbers, because she added a hashtag on Twitter, hashtag Stay Home Georgia. The numbers show deaths in Atlanta currently, in the state of Georgia, hit 904. And an increase of 34% over a week ago, and cases reached up to 22,695, up to 28% in a week. Governor Brian Kemp allowed nail and hair salons, tattoo parlors, gyms, and bowling alleys to reopen up Friday, despite Trump saying it was too early to lift lockdown orders. Some states' residents flocked to newly open businesses, and then some people are still apprehensive, like you men. What is your viewpoint on what the mayor is forewarning us? Do you feel like it's still appropriate and it's immature for people to start rushing to, like, especially a tattoo shop right now? Your opinion, Hal?
You know, I think it's too early. Because you really you don't have enough testing out there to determine actually who has it, who has this coronavirus. So if you don't have enough testing out there, how are you going to be able to determine that it's early enough for you to open up where people can be not practicing social distancing? And I just think it's way too early. You know, it's been really, if you look at it, it's really been hitting these.
If you're on speaker, take yourself off speaker.
If you've been looking at this, they've been, it's really been hitting the older folks, the nursing home, people with pre-existing conditions and things of that nature. You know, and I think these people should really try to stay in.
I heard. I didn't hear anything. I think if you're on speaker, if either one of you guys are on speaker or maybe it's the reception, I'm hearing chopped up parts of both of you guys' opinions. So I want to keep the conversation going, but I'm not quite sure if you need to move to a different area in the home or something. But normally I hear you guys loud and clear. Let me try a different method with the both of you. And just hang tight, okay? I'm going to try to call you guys in a different way. So just stay right there. hear me better now?
Does it sound any better?
I can
hear it. Yeah, it sounds much better. You can hear good too?
Yeah,
so
I can hear
you
fine. How about me?
Okay. All right, guys. Okay,
hello?
I'm back. Can you hear guys? Can you guys hear me better now?
Yeah, I can be fine.
Okay, you sound much clearer. Let me try to.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Okay, guys, can you hear me? Because the calls got dropped. Are you guys still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still
okay,
yeah.
Daryl? Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So let me hear from your opinion, because I did ask House a question. House, do you want to repeat what you stated so that way the audience can hear you?
What was your question again?
So I mentioned about Atlanta mayor issuing the stat currently on the number of deaths right here in the state of Georgia and warning those that want to hop right back into to go into nail salons. 904, an increase of 34% in over a week. And the cases have reached up to 22,695. That's 28% in a week. So she's pretty much at odds with Governor Brian Kemp. And even Friday, despite President Trump saying it was too early, he still went forward. So what do you think is his motive? Or do you agree with the apprehension?
Well, I'm in total agreement
okay,
with Keisha Lance. I'm in total agreement with Keisha
yeah.
Lance Bottom. I think it's too soon
okay.
for us to go back out into this pandemic world again, because we haven't reached a peak. There's not enough testings. I mean, you haven't tested enough people in order to see who actually has it. And I think she's totally right in being very apprehensive about going back. I mean, I think it should be
right.
a real slow pace.
Right.
Especially
now,
until we get enough testing.
And I agree with you on that. So, Daryl, what's your opinion on this, about the being unaware of the status we have right now with how many are affected? We're all walking around here in oblivion, afraid to go out, but you don't see any resolution about testing. That's not been very proactive. What's your opinion on that?
Well, like I said initially, yeah, I think testing should have been the first phase of any effort to reopen the state or the country. I mean, you know, there's, and you go to the top, you know, so-called top president who has not been very proactive or measured or even intelligent in terms of his approach. And then, you know, Kemp, the governor of the state of Georgia, makes his move and enters an order opening these various businesses. However, again, like Hal said, the testing is way off, it should be a more intelligent approach. And that's, I agree likewise that the mayor of Atlanta, Keisha Lance Bottoms, is taking an intelligent approach to it. And she is standing her ground, even to the point where she's, she got a horrible, I guess it was a Twitter message directed at her. They use a racial epithet. And, I mean, it might show to some degree the disparity in terms of the thinking. I mean, where you got people, some people, like in Michigan, so-called, Trump supporters and people risking their own lives demonstrating without protections, without masks, saying open the state. And I think Lance Biles, the mayor, has, despite whatever threats she might receive, she's holding her ground. She's saying, look, this is the way we're going to do it in Atlanta. We're not, whatever Kemp says, that's crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you, because currently I'm looking at something that was reported in Cleveland, Ohio, and this just came out today with an update. Ohio reports 728 deaths and 15,963 positive coronavirus cases in that one state. Ohio health officials released the latest batch of coronavirus statistics on Sunday, the 26th. So with that said, that should raise some flags. And then I wanted to mention to some of the listeners, and then you guys can chime in on your thoughts. I do agree with the approach, because Richmond, Virginia is starting to have it in CVS's, where they are opening places for testing. Then I just looked up testing for coronavirus near me, where we are in Georgia. Emory St. Joseph Hospital, they are a testing center. And pretty much what they state is, if you think you have COVID, the best thing to do is stay at home and isolate yourself. Always call your health care provider before going into the office. Avoid going to an emergency room unless you have or all of the symptoms, which is shortness of breath, dizziness, confusion, persistent high fevers, worsening symptoms after you initially start to feel better. That's the part that's bothering me, and I want to hear from you guys. So there's a few other places that are open. Emory University Hospital at Wesley Woods is holding testing. Emory at Decatur, they are a testing center. The Emory Hospital itself is a testing center. Emory and Johns Creek, CVS Health drive-through testing there in Atlanta. It's about 12 miles from here. Grady Health System is also conducting these testing. Jim Miller Park, Sugar Hill Church Drive, Georgia International Horse Park, Catonsville Medical Center, Floyd Medical Center, and those are just to name a few. So I think this is going all backwards. And what do you feel with just the numbers you just heard? And you guys can, I'll hear from you, Daryl, since I think you're originally from Cleveland. The number of deaths currently is 728 deaths in Cleveland, Ohio itself, with 15,963 positive corona cases. So with them having that amount of positive cases, this does sound very premature to start reopening certain things. Your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, again, consistent with my other view is, I agree it's premature. And I think everyone should look at, I think you're from New York, right? New York as an example, New York City, that's the epicenter of the pandemic. And New York, I mean, Cleveland could become New York. It's not as big as New York, of course, but without taking extreme measures, you're just in the tip of the iceberg, and it's going to get worse, or potentially could.
Right.
Hope it doesn't. But I could see that in Cleveland, you know, and I don't know exactly what they're doing because I haven't had any direct contact with, you know, any officials. I have family there, and I know that my family, they're taking precautionary measures. But I think that's everywhere. I don't know what the number
mm-hmm.
is in Atlanta. I don't, but it's increasing everywhere. So we got to be smart about
it. So, this. Okay. So currently in New York City, it's confirmed 155,000 confirmed, 16,599 deaths, 18,018 recovered. This is the latest statistics for New York City itself. Back on April 14th, it was 7,177 affected in the New York City. And this was including the counties, not just New York City, but, you know, they break it down into Nassau County, Suffolk County, Westchester County, and so on and so forth. So, House, before we keep getting deep into the stats, and I'll look up the stats for Atlanta, you said something earlier, House, that actually made a lot of sense in affecting the minorities. And not for nothing, but a lot of minorities seem to flock to nail salons, hair salons. And currently, what is the big deal about jumping back to your nail shop or getting your hair done when you have nowhere to go? Not to say that you should throw everything to the wind, but I agree with some of the things you're saying about a lot of the places that they're asking us to go to are cesspools for passing this shit on. Your DNA is involved, cutting hair, this is an airborne pathogen. So you're in these enclosed areas, especially nail salons, you don't even know, yeah, they could sterilize the instrument. But what is it really doing if we're just breathing in the same air as some people that are affected if we're not doing testing? Your thought on that, Aaron?
Well, my thought, I think the reasoning for a lot of these places that they want to reopen is because of these, they want to open back up our economy because they're still going to have to, these places, if they open it up, they can't get any government assistance.
Right. That's actually
so. I think it's more about economics than actually anything else. You know what I'm saying?
You there, House?
Hello.
I hear him, but he just went out. House, if you can hear us,
okay.
Come back.
Yes,
in.
I'm here.
Daryl. Okay.
Yes.
So finish what you were saying.
I think it's more about them trying to stimulate our economy. And these fields that they have chosen are some of the fields where you have more minorities and you have more people in these fields. You know, women now, if you look at all of these podcasts, if you look at all these shows that you look at that they are doing virtual, you cannot see one of these shows in the beginning that they didn't say something about hair, nails, or our outward appearance. No matter whether we're going outside or inside, we still care about our appearance.
Right.
So they open up a lot
of
these.
But is that vain then? Like, because that's vanity. And honestly, is it an essential? Do you feel like are these essentials that's necessary currently if you're not going to work, if you're not, you know, really going to outings? Doing it at home, doing it yourself, seems to be a more cautious way of handling things. And if you notice, since we've been having to stay at home, hasn't this allowed people to at least become very resilient with just using the basic essentials that we need in our lives? But it is affecting the economy and individuals. Bills don't stop, okay? Bills don't stop, and they keep piling up. But do you think, and both of you men can chime in, that this is a strategic plan to not issue out stimulus checks or issue out the unemployment that people are applying for? Because if they go back to work, then doesn't that cut them off from receiving any type of assistance with unemployment? Like, your opinion on that, Daryl, can start.
Yeah, actually, it does, and that's the thing. You know, when they first put the shelter-in-place, stay-at-home orders, people were automatically eligible for unemployment if they were affected. And those people in those same industries, beauty salons, nail polish, a place like that. And so once the governor of Georgia reversed that, okay, that makes them ineligible because, you know, your basis for unemployment claims are generally based on whether, you know, you can't work or you, you know, your business is shut down, things like that. And the claim, you know, a claim for unemployment is based on not your ability to work, but the fact that you can't work. So when he says, okay, we're going to open these places back up, that means you're eligible to work, therefore you're ineligible to receive unemployment compensation. So it's definitely, you know, that there's a motive behind that.
Yeah. What's your opinion on that?
I mean, I feel the same way, Daryl, dude, like I just stated earlier. You know, I think that it's more about opening up the economy so we can get more of finances rolling, more so than anything. But if we're not a healthy, if we're not healthy as a people, how can we get anything back rolling? You know, the number one issue should be us getting rid of this coronavirus, not us going back to work. You know what I'm saying? Because you got to realize we have not even reached our peak. If you look at the statistics from other places where it's been, overseas, France, Italy, as well as here in the United States, we haven't even reached our peak. And then this all brings us back to testing in Georgia. You know what I'm saying? There's probably not enough tests available for you to test the population of Georgia. And why would you want actually open this back up and restart it again?
Yeah,
I mean, restart the cycle all over,
bro. Expound on that. This is a thing, and you just brought it to my attention. To match the modestly high levels of coronavirus testing for which South Korea has been praised for, the U.S. would need to administer 7 million tests a week. And these facts are coming from the Wall Street Journal. That we'll be fortunate if we raise half of that number by September. And then to expound on that and to hear you guys' opinions about this, they raise a good question. And this is what's said. Okay, let me get to it. This is a conventional wisdom, and it has a critical flaw. We've taken for granted that our ingenuity can solve almost any problem. But what if, in this case, it can't? What if we can't scale up coronavirus testing as quickly as we need to? What if it takes us up to 6 to 12 months, guys, instead of 3, to identify an effective treatment for COVID? What if those who recover from the disease fail to gain immunity and therefore susceptible to getting reinfected? What if it takes us a year to develop a vaccine? What do you guys feel about me raising those questions? Because this is coming from the Wall Street Journal, and I think those are valid what ifs. So and if you need me to repeat any of those, guys, but I'm with this. What if it does take us 6 to 12 months?
Well, I mean, my opinion. I was just going to say, you know, it's whatever it takes. And if it takes 6 months, then so be it. I mean, Canada, and people are worried about the economy obviously people are worried about getting paid and working. But, you know, you have a place like Canada, from what I understand, they've halted mortgage payments. They have instituted a program where Canadians, I think, are collecting something like $980 a week. Well, every 2 weeks, something like that. I'm a little fuzzy on that. But the bottom line is the United States was the richest country in the world. There's plenty of money. They could sustain all of us for 6 months or a year. It may affect the economy, may slow it down, but would you rather have that as opposed to millions of people dying? And then my other view about that, and even and I think about it, and it makes me a little angry, is that the horse is already out of the barn, and it starts again with the federal government, who took an approach that the person in the White House initially said it was a hoax, downplayed it, played it off, made it into a joke, didn't do anything. He got rid of the pandemic team that President Obama started, and he did it, I think, out of spite, as he has done with a lot of things, and that is to de-install, if you will, some of the programs that Obama created. And in the end, we're all suffering. If the states had gotten on top of this in the very beginning, no excuses, no, well, it's somebody's fault, we don't have this, we didn't have that, it's China's fault. If we got on this, and I have a loose kind of background with Center for Disease Control, to the extent that I have represented at one point several employees with the Center for Disease Control. And one lady in particular I represented, she was involved with the teams. And what they would do is the United States at one point before Trump came in, they had CDC employees stationed in places like China. And their whole job was to, have the information, collect data, and then be able to address potential dangerous situations to this country. And because he got rid of those programs, it left us vulnerable. And so, I said, I know the horse is out of the barn, and we got to think about what to do moving forward. But had we done the right things in the beginning, it wouldn't even probably been at this stage, not even close.
Right. I like that viewpoint. Thank you for that. House, you want to expound on that and give your insight on this?
Everything that Gerald said, I think, was correct. And, it's bigger than us. You know, this thing here is bigger than us. It's going to change our lifestyle for the remaining of our life. It's going to have us thinking in different ways and what's going on. You know, you can't believe anything that President Trump says. It's like he gives you a front door story, and then you come with another story, and then he comes around. And you see how he put our governor under the bus.
Right. He threw
him under the bus. He doesn't care.
And then
he's making it
to where the mayor and the governor are on opposing sides. That's not good. You know what I mean?
Because
we're not on the same page in Georgia.
The mayor is representing her constituents. He's representing the state of Georgia. You know what I'm saying? So she's like, this doesn't work for us. I don't think this will work for me either. You know, I mean, she's totally right. Keisha did what she thought was right. And he did what he thought would be the best way to open back up the economy. Because just look how high the unemployment rate is now. I mean, people are now starting to learn how to live virtually. I mean, it's almost like you're on Star Trek or something.
Well, hey, this is the wave of the future. And with that said, some people are, and if some people just stop resisting, and I think that may be what it is as well. You know, when change occurs, some people are more flexible and open to change, where, you know, you have some people that are very tech savvy, and then you have some people that are not very susceptible and open to doing everything FaceTime with Zoom and working from home or doing something virtual, which now that's become a way we all even keep in touch with our families, with our friends, to prevent the spreading of this disease. So this is an interesting fact, and then This is coming from the Wall Street Journal, and then I want to hear from you guys on this because this is very interesting to say that most people who recover from the COVID develop antibodies to the virus, and these antibodies will confer protection from future reinfection. If more people gain immunity, the virus will have a harder time spreading, eventually dying out. But what if antibodies don't confer immunity, or if the protection doesn't last very long? This is very real and a possibility based on our experience with the other coronaviruses like the original SARS from 2003 and even a common cold. And the Wall Street Journal goes on to say, the same issue we may have, it's hard for biotech companies to develop an effective vaccine. Vaccines are hard enough to develop in normal circumstances. After decades of trying, we still don't have a vaccine against AIDS or hepatitis C. The fastest vaccine ever developed for a viral infection was the Ebola vaccine, which took 5 years. And yet, many commentators talk about developing a SARS/COV/2 vaccine within the next 12 to 18 months. And that's not a piece of cake. So with me saying all that, what would you want to add on to that, from those numbers and the months it took for a faster vaccine to just even conquer the Ebola vaccine? And this seems to be much, much stronger, which they're stating that it could take possibly up to 18 months just to create and develop this vaccine to assist individuals with the spreading. It's not easy. So what's your opinion on that? We'll start with you, House.
It's not easy, but, you know, it's technology. I mean, now you have a different technology than you had when those viruses was out. They can do it faster, quicker, more, and figure it out. And it's all about time. You know, usually at one point in time, it would take longer for them to find vaccines and different things. But now, with the technology that you have all of these major colleges actually trying to put together a vaccine for it. You know, they're doing a lot of the lab work. You know, and then, you know, one of the other questions is, once you get all these people tested here in Georgia, can the labs, how can you produce the results? Can the labs produce the results in an efficient way? Can they put them back out as quick as they get them?
Correct. So, Mr. Hines, you want to expound on what House is saying and what I just discussed? Because that does raise an interesting viewpoint.
Well, you know, the one thing about any vaccine, when scientists go into a lab to try to create or discover a vaccine, there are clinical trials and testing before they can approve that. The FDA normally has the oversight over that, but it takes usually months and sometimes years for a vaccine to be tested, to go through a clinical trial, and to test it, make sure, you know, what are the side effects, what will it do. Sometimes, as you know, we listen to you'll see a commercial on television about some medication, and they give you the side effects, and the side effects are worse than the disease or the problem that the person is dealing with. And, you know, I think that there's no way they could have started to create a vaccine or started clinical trials before they were aware of the situation. But certainly to think that, you know, a vaccine is going to be an overnight panacea, it's going to solve all the problems, that's going to cure this, is certainly being unrealistic. And so, not to say they shouldn't continue the efforts to discover a vaccine, but the question is, and I think a lot of people, I even see things sometimes on social media where people raise the question, if there's a vaccine developed, will you take it? And a lot of people say no. You don't know what it might do.
I myself have said that amongst people that I know personally. I don't think I would feel comfortable taking a vaccine. House, your opinion on that? Because what if you have other issues, illnesses going on? And someone had pointed in our direction a newscaster. He was African-American. And he got blasted on Twitter for saying that us as minorities are affected from this COVID due to our lack of information of health and our health at state where it is now. Currently, you know, minorities are the highest rates to have diabetes, hypertension, and certain diseases. And our nutrition, we're not eating healthy. And due to the socioeconomic demographics in certain areas, it's not offered for certain people to eat good. So then is that a racist statement against minorities? Or is it a racist statement in your opinion? Or do you feel that we all currently need to be more proactive with our health and monitoring where we are health-wise because of this and wanting to deny a vaccine if presented to us? What if they put this out there where it is like you must take the vaccine? If they pressured Americans to say you have to, would you resist? Aaron?
I probably wouldn't. You know, it just totally depends. Just like any other virus, like with the measles and anything, any of these other little shots that you're taking when you're coming up, you know, they got to be tested. Some people is going to be great, other people is not.
Okay. I see where you're coming from. I mean, just I've
and you can only you can only go over time. You can only go over time before you figure out who is. Some people might be allergic to the things that's in it. Some people might not. But it might be the benefit of everybody, of the body as a whole, you know,
right,
for us to kind of get out of this. But we are in the United States. We're not China. We're not a dictatorship. You know, we're a democracy.
Right.
So it'll be your
right
choice. And that's
correct
all you really want to ask
yeah
for, is to have a choice.
So, and our choice, and you pointed out a very valid point, we're not under a dictatorship, so that could never just be enforced. Because, honestly, I've never had to take a flu shot, ever. And I don't get the flu, like when flu season comes around. I do take precautions and matters to build my immune system to keep it at a point to where it is strong. And those are methods that I've just been consistent with. So, Daryl, to add to what House is saying and I'm saying, what do you think about enforcing the vaccine, or do you take other precautions as a person? Like, would you be forced and would you do it? Or do you have an opinion about even taking a vaccine at this point?
Well, I have an opinion. I'd be a little skeptical. This country has had a horrific history when it comes to testing and vaccines and experiments. I think back to the Tuskegee experiments, and even though that was a long
yeah
time ago, where they, you know, tried to test a cure for syphilis or something like that, and who were the candidates? You know, they pretty much forced a group of men, African-American men, to submit themselves to actually being injected with the disease, therefore to see if there was a way to cure it. And the problem I might have if I'm told, well, there's a vaccine, it will prevent the coronavirus, COVID for short, I would be skeptical, because I'd want to know, okay, what are the side effects? And how much testing has been done, And then sometimes, what if you're, I mean, you're a perfectly healthy person. They inject you just like I think you mentioned about flu shots. And I know my father used to get flu shots all the time when he was alive. And I used to say, you know, I don't know if that's a good idea. Why would, you know, you inject yourself with the flu virus? I understand the thought behind
yourself,
it is to create, yeah, but also to create some resistance. But, you know, generally the thought is you inject yourself with the disease so they can cure the disease. I mean, it just, to me, mm-hmm. doesn't always make sense. And I know people who've had flu shots who get the flu. Okay?
And that's what happened to me. I had to get it. Yeah. I was forced to take it because I was a teacher in Hawaii. And honestly, I was very resistant, but I wanted the job. And when I took that shot, I wind up getting the flu. So it weakened my immune system. Mm-hmm. And that's my apprehension, guys, because certain people, and you have to focus on those that are older or people that are just not into taking care of their health. There's a lot of people that eat fast food, and I'm not talking against anyone, but a lot of individuals that are being affected by this, and some are very healthy, and then just some sneak up on you. But taking a vaccine currently that's still in the works is something I would be apprehensive to taking.
But, Daryl, you know, Daryl, seeing that you put it that way, I would agree with you as well, to the point of I wouldn't be one of the first people to take the vaccine. You know what I'm saying? But I would want to see how it do, how it would go along and with everyone else. And then if I felt at the appropriate time it was good to take it, I would. You know what I'm saying? Just to be honest.
Okay.
Just like anything else with medical stuff. You know?
Correct.
I mean, who's going to profit from this, actually? I mean, just ask yourself, who's going to actually correct pharmaceutical?
Right.
Yeah.
And they work with the government. So,
and it all goes
really
back down to economics.
And honestly, these are just, to me, this is like, okay, let's try this and see how many it will be a success and how many it would be non-successful for them to gather some statistics on this. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be anyone's guinea pig. And so to bounce right back to something, and you guys were talking about the economy, because this is, seems like where this is being more pushed because of our economy. So Mark Cuban, and I'm pretty sure everyone who's familiar with Mark Cuban, he discussed with Fox News the economic impact of this virus in the business virtual world, so in the virtual town hall. And he discussed he's never been shy about expressing his views on business and the economy. So from what he stated, and this is interesting, viewers also had the ability to submit a video questions for consideration. So related to this was more than 4.4 million laid-off workers applied for U.S. unemployment benefits just last week as job cuts escalated across an economy that remains all but shut down. The government said this last Thursday, and roughly 26 million people have now filed for jobless aid in the 5 weeks since the coronavirus outbreak began, forcing millions of employers to close their doors. So about 1 in 6 American workers have lost their jobs in the past 5 weeks. And this is thus by far the worst string of layoffs on record. And that's more than the number of people who live in the 10 largest U.S. cities combined. So have you guys, when hearing this information, are there those that you see around you, your loved ones, some of your friends, your colleagues, that are being hit like this? And what matters are you taking or are they taking to get assistance? Let's go with House. Aaron Woodhouse, are you there? Daryl Hines, are you there?
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
House will chime in.
Measures.
What you heard what I said about this, the economy
Well, my primary example is my son, who's a chef, and his restaurant, they've been taking a conservative approach, even with the reopening of the state. Before that, you know, they went from a dine-in to a curbside service. And in fact, when I've gone there, you aren't able to come in the restaurant. You order from outside. Even if you walk up there, mm-hmm. you know, they have a table set. They have a table that blocks the door. And everyone inside the restaurant who will remain there wearing masks and gloves. And then when someone orders, they have to stay outside, wait for their order, and then it's brought out to them. And they're continuing to do that, from what I understand. Well, yeah, they're continuing to do that. Even with the opening of certain businesses, their approach is still to be cautionary and not to allow dine-in service at this point. And I think they're going to my son has told me they're going to adhere to that position for the next 30 days at least, because with that, they figure it'll give them time to see the overall effects of reopening things.
That actually makes a lot of sense, what they're doing and what he's doing and what the company is doing as a whole, because I believe, and I actually agree with their precautions, that we all still need to take matters in our hands with taking the time to do what's best for your health and listening to what's being said, and not walking in fear, but practicing good hygiene, washing your hands for over 20 seconds, wearing your mask, wearing gloves when you're out and about, and also staying home. You know, we do have to go out for essentials. You go to the grocery store, you have to restock on certain things. Life itself has totally changed. And Aaron mm-hmm. Woodhouse, are you still with us? House, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So we were just talking about Daryl made some points about, like, with this economy, and then his son, who is an executive chef at the Lawrence, and they are not inclined to reopening and still going to do curbside orders to take out. And so
if you look at some of these nail salons, some of the places that he said that he wanted to open are refusing to open.
Right.
And that's because they want to be safe. And they want to make sure that they can continue to stay open instead of being open for a short period of time. I mean, the restaurant business, I think the restaurant industry kind of got it. If they got a chain, they kind of got it figured out on how to do it. Because I've been to a pizza joint where they only let one person inside. They got these lines built in. Even in your Kroger's now, they have these lines of practicing mm-hmm. social distancing. You know what I'm saying? So
correct.
Basically it's trying to start to become a new way of life for us right now. You know, this coronavirus
exactly.
has changed everybody's life in one way or another. And it changes the way we socialize. You know, I've had a couple right. friends back home who their parents passed away. They could only have 10 people at the funeral.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, and it's changing the way we deal with one another, and it is affecting our economy. You know, you gotta realize people are losing money. But how can you spend that money if you're not safe?
Exactly.
So that's why
if you're
someone
even survive, are we gonna outlive this virus or the economy? Let's question that. That's, you know what I'm saying. So I'm going to ask you guys one final question. What steps do you think the country should take to reopen the economy? I would like to just hear what type of insight the both of you gentlemen would have on this. It's not the all-to-all answer, but what is your opinion about that? What approach should we take? Neither one of you can chime in when you're ready.
Okay. You said to open the economy, what step?
What step do you think the country should take to reopen the economy? Like, we should reopen workplaces to healthy non-elderly individuals who don't live with vulnerable people. At-risk individuals with jobs should continue to have opportunities, you know, work from home or to receive paid medical leave. And we should reopen businesses that may not be essential but can be safely operated while maintaining appropriate physical distancing. Since House did make a very good point that going into a pizza shop, going into your CVS, like even going into like that Zoe's Kitchen, one person or two people in at a time, they're handling it, you know, they're still distancing from us, and there's like one worker back there that's actually preparing the food, and we're still going to these places and practicing the social distancing and wearing up the mask. So what do you think? What steps do you feel or you think would be smart to go in a direction to reopen the economy by taking certain steps? What do you feel? How do you want to start?
I don't think that we should reopen the economy. I mean, I think we should do whatever we do. I think it should be slow. And we should go into this looking at it slowly. You know what I'm saying? I think we should still be practicing social distancing. We should be wearing our masks. We should be wearing our gloves, things to keep us from getting it and giving it to someone else. You know, so I think everything should be slow and until we figure it out. Especially if you go by what other countries have done. You know, I think it only worked in China because it was a dictatorship and mm-hmm. the government enforced it like that. Here we are a democracy and we have our own freedoms. So we have a right to our own opinion and our own thoughts. So some of us are gonna cooperate and others are not. So just to be expected.
Correct. Right.
Well,
and
whatever
we do,
I think it needs to be slow.
Correct. I like your opinion on that, House. Daryl, you have some insight about that? And then I'll give you guys my final point, because it's something interesting happening in East Asian countries currently, that they're doing something with technology. I'll state that once you say your opinion, Daryl.
Okay, well, I agree with House. It should be a slow, phased-in approach. I think they can sit back, again, continue social distancing. I mean, for a while, we're going to have to deal with the new economy. I know a lot of people traditionally would go into offices or, you know, the place of business to work are now working from home, and that might be the new normal for at least for the next year or so. But all in all, there should be a slow, phased-in approach, combined testing, maintaining social distance, and then working on what might be a cure, and then see how people can best continue to work and contribute to the economy without necessarily being close together. And I think phase one would be, again, you initiate widespread testing, and then phase two, gradually expand on the economy. And for those people who can work from home, there are a lot of jobs, people particularly in high-tech positions, who can easily work from home. In fact, you know, telework, they call it, in some circumstances, people are doing that, okay? So that should be implemented wherever there's a possibility that people can work from home, let them work from home.
I agree, because even like myself, I had to talk to my doctor. And even in your doctor's offices in the hospital, she and I FaceTimed. I was able to talk to her about some of my concerns, about something I felt like I needed assistance with. She was able to take everything in, give an assessment, and gave me specific instructions on what I needed to do. If I needed to go into the hospital for a lab testing for something, it was just an individual visit with myself. No one was actually in there. and it was safe, effective, and I got my situation resolved. So this is something that I wanted to mention to you guys, and maybe this will be of help since we are in this techie world. In recent months, East Asian countries like Singapore, Taiwan, and South Korea have deployed a much more sophisticated version of contact tracing, in which Bluetooth or GPS-enabled smartphones help officials automatically alert those who have recently been in close contact with an affected individual. So the U.S. companies are working on versions of technology, including some with robust privacy protection. So they're trying to say that if we succeed in encouraging people to use the contact tracing app in the U.S., we may be able to control the spread of COVID-19 with the modest levels of testing we already have. Do you think that's a smart way of doing it? Because everyone has a smartphone nowadays and GPS and Bluetooth to track them. What do you think about that? Either one of you men can chime in. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me finish it up. A key virtue of contact tracing is that it can work in an environment where testing for SARS-CoV-2 is far from universal. Indeed, if we succeed and encourage people to use the contact tracing app in the U.S., we may be able to control the spread of the COVID with the modest levels of testing we already have. Do you think that's a good, that's something good, like a good strategy? How, are you with me, Hal?
Yes. To be honest with you, I really don't know. I mean, I agree with you. A lot of people, I don't know how you would have it hooked up to your cell phone or how that would work, or would you have to go back and get another cell phone? It depends on what the process is with doing that.
Right.
You know, is your phone currently capable of doing this?
Well, with what they're saying is if we were to use our just the Bluetooth that we already have and your GPS, it could track and trace the amount of individuals that have been exposed to people that are affected with this. And then we would be able to monitor the amount of individuals that have already been tested, and then we can control the level of testing that we already have. And they're already putting this intact in East Asian countries, Singapore, Taiwan, and South Korea. So they've already started, and the U.S. is starting to work on this version of technology, including some with robust privacy protection. So I think it would be something interesting to dive deep into, because everybody's being tracked. You can be traced and tracked with the chip in your card to the Bluetooth. Everyone has a Bluetooth on their phone. Even if you have a basic smartphone, you still have Bluetooth and GPS on that phone.
Wow. But how are you?
The
question is, how are you going to track that? Let's say even when we have Bluetooth on our phones, but we got the right to turn it off.
Yeah, we do.
So what if someone decides that they're going to turn it off? How are you going to track it then?
They're being resistant, but if they can prove and mandate this that. People can enable their the smartphones to help officials automatically alert those. Then we have something to control the amount that we are getting, like receiving with statistics, so we can understand the amount of testing that needs to be done, the amount of individuals that it's being affected by. This would, and the U.S. is already implementing this or starting to do this. This could help us that we can work in an environment where testing for this is universal. And you just encourage people to use the contact tracing app it can control the spread of the virus. If it's going to help control the spread, then I'm all for it. And that's what technology is for. So what do you think about that? Do you feel like that could be an option? How are you still with me? Okay, guys, I'm going to wrap this up. I think both of my callers are having some issues with the phone lines, but I wanted to thank both of the gentlemen for being on the show today. If you do hear me, you can chime in. But what I'm going to do is close this out with my final thought for this afternoon. We covered a lot of territory today based on the current events that are affecting the world as we live in currently. And this pandemic has affected us in our economy and the way that we are moving forward in this world. Things are not going to go back to normal. We should really focus on the social distancing, staying at home, and not be so heavy, like quick to jump back in to society for non-essential things. The spread of this virus is continuing. Numbers are still growing, and precaution does need to be done. So with that said, this is what needs to, in my opinion, you know, reopening the economy is not merely about livelihoods, but also about lives. All of us can see the mounting mental and emotional toll that it's taking on all of us with this lockdown. And we've learned a great deal in recent years about how high unemployment increases and deaths of despair. So if we keep these urgent problems in mind and not just infection rates and case fatality ratios, we may yet find our way out of this crisis. And I think that needs to be what's kept in mind currently. This is Ty Jones. I want to thank my guests that were on the show today, Aaron Woodhouse out of Atlanta, Georgia, and my guest, Daryl Hines, of Atlanta, Georgia. I want to thank you guys for tuning in to Blog Talk Radio this afternoon. Stay safe. Stay at home. If you don't have to go out today and you have all your basic essentials, your food, your water, and things necessary to be in the house, stay home. If you have to go out, practice hygiene with washing of the hands when you enter back in. Even washing your clothing, keep on your mask, wear your gloves. Don't dump gloves and masks on the street, or, you know, don't do that. That's so disrespectful. Let's take care of our planet so we can take care of us. This is Love Joan Ty with Blog Talk Radio, and thank you, and have a wonderful evening, and be safe.